KALW.
And I told my mom, grandma doesn't go to church because she's a witch. You know, my mom said, don't say that. You can't say that.
Take a peek into Maya Songbird's world at Oakland's very own magic shop.
And it is a DIY botanica on handmade witch supplies.
We step through a portal on Peralta Street. Then we find out why gamers are still devoted to a nearly 30-year-old fantasy game.
This one I'm working on now is called Obnixilis. The best way I can describe them, Iron Maiden meets demonic possession.
And we'll hear a reading from San Francisco author Kimberly Unger.
It's a cyberpunk story about that one person whose job it is to pull you back out of virtual reality when you really don't want to go.
It's a magical menagerie. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we start with a story from our series, At Work.
I have a lot of pride in my work.
How do you do it?
Sprays, masks, gloves.
I'm with the Swamp Team.
Hi, my friends, and how are you?
It's nice now with technology.
Pandora's box has been opened.
It's a beautiful way to make your living, but it's more work than I ever imagined.
In West Oakland, there's this creative queer mall housed in an art space called the Slurp Gallery. It's divided into different storefronts occupied by a variety of queer artists and entrepreneurs. There's a studio space, a beauty supply store, and a specialty shop for all your witchy needs. For our series At Work, KALW's Hanisha Harjani met the person behind the magic at Maya's Magic Shop.
On the busy corner of Peralta and 14th Street, there's a doorbell. Ring it, and you'll enter another world.
Doorbell.
Hello.
What's up?
The community comes in, and they're just like, I'm in a whole other world right now at the magic shop, and I needed that experience.
That's Maya Songbird.
And I am a singer, songwriter, magician.
And she's the resident witch at Maya's Magic Shop. She opened this Oakland location in 2020 and another one in San Francisco this year. Beyond the door is a burst of blue. A mural of Maya frames the entrance. The smell of incense fills the air.
And it is a DIY botanica on handmade witch supplies.
Maya shows me around.
You got crystals, you got all types of rings, daggers, all kind of goodies.
Like potions and lotions and magic hair grow.
Everything you need for your altar divination. Like we got some god boxes, altar kits.
With a collection of ceremonial items to help you connect with your spirit.
And then you step over and you have all of my candles that all hold powerful magic.
Lining the shelves are what must be hundreds of magic candles in every shape and color you can imagine. I see orange brains and green clamshells, puzzle pieces that are brown and white and yellow, penises and vulvas in pinks and reds, each one of them charmed with their own specific purpose. Maya is famous for these candles. She makes them in-house, setting careful intentions for each pour of the wax.
Does that help with my anger? Well, yes, it does.
Behind the register, Maya breaks up wax in her candle-making workshop. There are shelves full of different molds and jars piled high. Maya's work table is covered in a rainbow of splattered dry wax. On a burner that clicks, she melts some more.
So we're setting intentions for this candle.
Maya pours a glossy purple wax into a holographic glass jar.
The first layer is going to be intuition. We all need a good bout of intuition, especially as our world progresses into the madness that it is right now.
Before she opened the magic shop, you could really only find these candles at the merch table of a Maya Songbird show. She would sing enchanting melodies and sell her magic candles on the side.
My foundation is music, and I've built a world around that.
Maya began singing and playing clarinet as a young girl growing up in San Francisco.
Born and raised, I lived in the historical Castro the Bell's Triangle, Noe Valley, for like 11 years of my life. I grew up there. So that in itself was magic and liberation. Like, I lived in a place where people were themselves and they were happy to be themselves.
She spent her days as a child creating art.
My grandma Frances, she would always show me how to make things with my hands, and she had a magic touch. She could create anything.
And they always created together.
Well, she did tell me when I was younger, I was a kid, that she was a witch. And I told my mom, grandma doesn't go to church because she's a witch. You know, my mom said, don't say that. You can't say that.
Eventually, though, her mother couldn't deny the magical legacy that Maya inherited.
My mom walked into my workspace one day and she just like gasped because she was like, this looks exactly like your great grandma's shed in Georgia.
Her great grandmother, Mary Glenn, made concoctions out of the plants and herbs she grew.
Because back in the day, of course, Blacks, we didn't have health care. We had each other. We had the healer. And my grandma was that. She had a whole shed full of potions to heal her community, and people came to her for healings.
Maya wants to create a space for her community, too. In rapidly gentrifying cities like San Francisco and Oakland, DIY spaces like the Magic Shop are hard to keep open.
Capitalism is very brutal. You know, I feel like, who can you trust when people more so care about money than they care about each other? And that's really scary. So for me to exist, I'm keeping those integrities, those morals intact, you know, and that love for community and DIY spaces alive, you know.
Maya's shop is home to items from many local queer artists. Her storefront allows them a space to showcase their work to the community, like this vendor who stopped by to drop off some of their handmade jewelry.
All of it has crystals in it for extra sauce, extra magic.
You know, I always say, like, the truest power is to empower others.
In order to keep uplifting her community of artists, Maya's also crafting up some big spells in her spare time.
I'm getting really tired of capitalism, so I'm trying to figure out the ultimate way to use my powers to banish it. When you see it, it's ultra demise, just know Maya did it.
Until then, you can find Maya at one of her magic shops on either side of the bay. In Oakland, I'm Hanisha Herjani for Cross Currents.
I believe in magic. I believe in magic. I believe in magic.
Thanks, Hanisha. You can learn more about Maya Songbird and the Magic Shop at kalw.org.
You wanna get down, get down, get down on a funky beat. Come on, sing along, come say it with me. You say, I believe in magic. You say, I believe in magic. I've got magic in my heart. I've got magic in my brain.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba. As we heard in our last story, magic can be a source of healing and empowerment. It can also provide a means of escape and even adventure. We're talking about the collective card game, Magic: The Gathering. Magic started out in 1993 as quaint and a little cheesy, like this promo from its early years.
Hasten then. We must get to the Dwarven Gate before the others. This way.
But it's become a slick powerhouse that has been played by nearly 40 million people. So how has a game from the 90s managed to retain its popularity in an era of cutting-edge games and entertainment? In this story from our archives, we visit a local tournament that reporter Jeremy Dalmas checked out in 2015 to hear what makes these cards so resilient.
Suddenly, the peace is broken.
Mountain?
Planeswalker Mike Escalante is amassing his army.
Is that a surfing goblin?
Yeah.
But Planeswalker Matt Wilcox is unfazed. He summons a demon.
This one's called Archfiend of Depravity.
Escalante's reinforcements arrive on horseback just in time.
Warflare?
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
And Wilcox admits defeat.
Yes, I did just lose.
Welcome to Magic the Gathering. You are a planeswalker, a wizard who, well, you're actually just a gamer. A gamer who can summon legendary beasts. I mean, collect limited edition cards, build them into decks, and battle opponents. You start the game with 20 life points, and with a hand filled with creature cards and spell cards. You and your opponents take turns using those cards to cast spells against one another, to summon creatures to attack, and to prevent your life points from hitting zero. That's the basics. And the true test of a planeswalker is at one of the traveling tournaments, which was at the battlegrounds of the San Jose Convention Center.
We have 1,965 players here today. Thank you for coming out and making this a gigantic event.
Welcome to Grand Prix San Jose. Magic tournaments like this one used to be cozy. Look down the convention hall today and you see hundreds of tables. And every year, there are more. Matt Wilcox may have lost that earlier game, but at this tournament, he has another chance. He's with teammates Michelle Robertson and Mike Kahn. What do these warriors hope to accomplish today?
If we could win 6 of our 9 rounds, I'd be pretty happy.
I guess that's our goal, right?
They get their cards and start amassing clans of horseback warriors and mystical monks. Walk around the tournament and you'll see how dedicated people are to these cards. There's Christine Sprankle, who is dressed up as the character Gisa, a ghoul caller from the game who raises the undead.
I look like a demented bride. It's my wedding attire, and every night's my wedding with my ghouls, so that's my weekend.
There are judges like Toby Elliott who travel from tournament to tournament like fans for a band might.
And I've grown up with a lot of these people and spent a lot of time with them, and they're some of my dearest friends. These are our times to get together.
And there are artists here who sign cards the same way authors sign books. Right now, Jason Felix is drawing one of his characters for a fan.
This one I'm working on now is called Obnixilis. The best way I can describe him, Kiss meets Iron Maiden meets, demonic possession.
I get a text. The team is at table 917. My visions of them as victorious warriors are dashed when I find out they lost their first round.
All right, this is the start of round 2. You have 50 minutes. You may begin.
The edge of the room is lined with a dozen vendors, each with hundreds of their best cards under plexiglass. Magic isn't just for playing. Collecting is huge. Harrison Bates works for one of those vendors.
Yeah, we came from LA.
Good cards can sell anywhere from under a buck to, well, the most expensive card I saw was one called Black Lotus with a $5,400 price tag.
That's a lot of money in Magic, yeah, hell yeah.
You can buy a pack of 15 random new cards for about $3 or $4. Wizards of the Coast, the company that makes the game, only prints so many of each card, and the most powerful cards are often the rarest, meaning you have to buy lots of packs to find the cards you want, or you have to purchase those cards off of someone else who bought those packs. Bates is trying to find foil cards, shiny versions of normal cards.
I've been foiling out all weekend because I love the deck so much, you know, so I feel like the deck should feel that I love it.
In tournaments like this one, you can only use the newest cards, meaning you keep buying. There is no denying that this is an expensive hobby, and Wizards of the Coast has thought hard about how to keep players buying new cards year after year. I get a text. The team is at table 505. One of our heroes, Matt Wilcox, is battling Phil Takata, a biology teacher who brought students to the tournament. Wilcox has summoned a phoenix. But it's no match for Takata's dragon.
Oh no.
Big dragon.
Yeah, that's good.
Go dragon! Matt, it was a pleasure.
Our warriors aren't doing that well.
We are currently at 1 win and 3 losses. Not as great as we had hoped, but at least we're not winless.
Meaning, to achieve their goal, they can't lose any more games. But, of course, this isn't just about winning. Teammate Michelle Robertson explains.
I moved out here from Florida last year, and this is a great way to make friends with people who love the same things you do. I've met other women who are really into the game, and you don't see a lot of women at Magic tournaments, so it's really cool.
They rush off to the next battle.
Sealed Challenge players, your pairings are being posted. Please find your seats.
Look around the room, and it's hard to miss that probably 90% of the people competing are young men. It's no secret to Wizards of the Coast. Tom LaPelli used to work there, and he says that the best way to have more diverse players is to have the cards be representative. Recently, they introduced
the first transgender character in the Magic world. It was just incredibly supportive, and that's not a given in the gaming world, right? Like, it's not always as that accepting of a place to be.
More casual play isn't as much of an issue, but it can be hard to make tournaments welcoming for women. One woman I asked at the tournament didn't want to be recorded on tape talking about it because she was afraid of backlash from the greater gaming community. But there are more women coming to tournaments than used to, even if that number is small. I head over to the team. They've lost 4 games, and they look a little glum.
We're out of contention for any sort of prize. We got here at like 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's about to be 8 o'clock.
I'm tired. You can probably tell my voice is kind of gone. I personally let my team down more than they let me down.
Even though we were not successful in our Magic domination, we still had a really great time. We met a lot of cool people.
Our heroes pack their cards into their bags, hang their heads, and head back home. Even the bravest warriors must sometimes admit defeat. For Cross Currents, I'm Jeremy Dalmas.
That was a story from our archives that originally aired in 2015. You can find more of Jeremy's work at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba. Now we'll hear a reading about a virtual world that can be hard to leave. It's another episode from KALW's literary podcast, New Arrivals.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Kimberly Unger lives near San Francisco. Her book, The Extractionist, came out on July 12th, 2022.
It's a cyberpunk story about that one person whose job it is to pull you back out of virtual reality when you really don't want to go. And here's one of my favorite parts. Eliza Newray, Winona McKay, could have sworn that the red warning triangle on the side of the cup wasn't flashing a minute ago, but you never could tell with cheap paper circuits. They failed just as often as they worked. McKay was in Singapore to meet with a potential client. A reference from an old friend, a message through a cheap, secure service, and a meeting location delivered via self-destruct messenger all suggested inexperience and overkill. In McKay's line of work, discretion was standard. Nobody ever wanted to admit a boss or a family member had gotten themselves trapped in a virtual world. Still, the reference had come from a colleague she respected, and it had been years since she'd spent some quality time in Lion City, so she'd made the trip.
That was Kimberly Unger reading from The Extractionist.
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. You can hear more readings at kalw.org. Now, before we go, let's listen to some new music from local business owner and musician, Maya Songbird. We heard about Maya's magic shop earlier in the show. This is a song from her band Telepathic Children with bandmate Dorsey Bass. They released a new music video for this song earlier this month.
I'm gay for you. Will you be gay for me too? Don't be straight.
Today's team includes Sydney Fishman, Aaron Kopp, James Rollins, Gabe Graben, Victor Tentz, Shireen Adel, Shia Levitt, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is from the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba.
I already forget what that is. I can't even think about a man again. I already forget what that is.